Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From the University of Warmia and Mazury in Poland comes a study about organic potatoes. Seems though they contain more microelements than are often deficient in soil. So researchers at these two prestigious universities investigated the effect of three production systems, namely conventional, integrated, and organic farming. In the United States, 95% of our farming is conventional factory farming. A very small amount is the integrated, and even less so is organic. But most people who are educated, who understand the importance of good nutrition, are going to go to the farmer's market and get locally grown, wherever possible, organic, or to a health food store, food co-op, etc. In point of fact, even the larger chains like Costco and Walmart are carrying organic now. But what you want when you're buying organic is you're wanting several things. First, you want to support the local farmer. That's an important thing. And the local economy. Next, you want something that's a clean food that doesn't have pesticides on it. Now, it may have natural sprays like I would put together, and I'm a certified organic farmer. And I had the only teaching organic farm in New York State back in 1971, 72 for a long period of time up through 1985 when I sold it, the Fertiller Farm, and thousands upon thousands of you visited it. We must have had, from Memorial Day through Labor Day, even in, depending upon the weather, clear up to Thanksgiving, we'd have teaching workshops there on the weekend. Wouldn't be unusual for 300 people to drive up on a Sunday. You get a whole meal and then get to see how food is grown, how tofu is made. It was fun. It was a joyful time. And then later, I bought along with Dr. Donald Mullen, my friend who was one of the top therapists over at the Albert Ellis Center, and Kenny, who was a state trooper, and Neil, who was a lawyer. We bought it together as a group, a large black dirt farm in Goshen, New York. That's the richest soil in the world. And you talk about things growing fast and growing healthy and having more nutrients. Well, that's the best soil there is. It's so soft that when you walk on it, the ground shakes. And yet the average person is eating corn or wheat or soybeans, the three most commonly grown crops in America, on soil that is depleted. And they keep boosting it each year with some artificial fertilizers. And then when the bugs come, because they only grow one crop, a monocrop, then the soil is depleted of nutrients. They don't protect the soil in the wintertime by growing a cover crop. Generally, after you harvest, you then should put down another crop, one that you will let grow through the fall and over the winter, and then you plow that under in the spring, and what you plow under, like soybeans, for example, non-genetically engineered soybeans, that all becomes part of the nitrogen reinforcement, in effect, of fortifying new soil. It also prevents the cracking of the dirt in the spring after the freezing of the ground, and then that allows these little tiny cracks, millions of them in an average acre, and that's where your water runs off, and then it takes the soil with it, so you have soil erosion when you have this stupid type of destructive mono farming, single crop. So you get insects. Now, the right way of doing it is just to put chickens out there. That's what I did. I had 500 chickens on this black dirt farm, and lo and behold, there were no insects. Also, the chickens give you an egg, and so I'd give it to the local farmer, and the farmer and his daughter would take it in the market and sell, an awful lot of eggs. If you've got 500 chickens laying, and they're laying 7 days a week, you're getting 3,500 eggs a week, and if you have a dozen, you're getting over 291. Let's say that's $4. Well, you're making almost $1,200 a week just from the eggs. Now, I'm a vegan. I didn't do anything. I just cared about the chickens having long lives, and they will live a long life, be very friendly. You're sitting there, they'll jump right up in your lap so you can give them little hugs and pet them. In any case, they're eating all the insects. But let's say you've got some particularly pesty things coming at you. Well, you just take some cayenne pepper and you take some garlic oil or garlic that you can make yourself, garlic juice, press some garlic juice. And you put that into a dilution of about 20 to 1, 20 parts water to 1 part of that dilution with cayenne and garlic, and you spray that. You can spray it on all the leaves, your raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, tomatoes, cucumbers, and it kills the aphids. It kills all types of pests. So zero loss from any of that. In fact, many of you remember, I would hand you all a big black garbage bag, and I told you, go in and pick whatever you want and take it home with you. And then we had a group that come up from the churches every week, and I wanted to see that the churches and all the religious groups that had hungry parishioners could have food. And we, oh, my goodness, I'm guessing 500 pounds of organic produce every week we'd send back someone on. By the way, just something, someone asked me something, just as an aside. They have rats and mice. And they were using the traps that breaks their neck. I don't recommend that. They instead, you get these little sticky traps. You put them around, but then it's a mess because the mouse is squealing. It wants to live. It's just trying to survive. So here's what you do. You simply take some coconut oil and you put the coconut oil, use gloves, you don't get bitten. You put coconut oil on where they're stuck. And then you let that seep through. And as you move the little creature's body around, it comes right off. And then take them out where they can be safely let go. I believe in catch and release. There's no purpose in killing these little creatures. And especially on a farm, because if you have animals, you're going to have rats. But there's down here in Florida, there are palm rats. They live in the top of palm trees, little brown things. And they don't hurt anything. But if they get in the trap and you don't want them around the animal food because you don't want it to pollute it, that's one humane way to get rid of anything that's in a trap, including a bird that might get stuck in a trap. Coconut oil. Coconut oil acts as a lubricant, and you could take a rat or a bird off a trap in 3 or 4 minutes without hurting it. All right? Something simple. In any case, going to the point, when we saw the lab results of organic produce and how many more nutrients it had, higher percentage than the regular crop, it's because the regular crop can't put back into the ground everything that nature had there and can be easily restored with different manures, chicken manure, cow manure, horse manure. You let it sit for a year. You let the microorganisms digest and even compost. I think people should have compost. Make your own little backyard garden, make a little compost. And those things are hot inside, right in the middle, because it's still alive. It's microorganisms. And you put that on your soil, then blend that into soil, rake it into your soil. Now your soil's rich again. It'd be like giving an anemic person a blood transfusion. That's what happens when you return to the soil that micronutrient base that it needs, nitrogen that it needs. The worst crop to grow in America is corn because it takes out the nitrogen from the soil. And so this way you're putting nitrogen back in. When you grow something in the winter, plow it under in the spring, and then it becomes the basis of your summer soil crop. And that was just a little extemporaneous based on what I just read in this scientific article, and that's what they found, that quite simply, organic farming allows crops to obtain more essential micronutrients from the soil than either conventional farming or integrated farming. And these microelements are crucial not only for plant growth and development, but also for the plant's survival. This was published in the journal Acta Agricultural Scandinavia. So organic farming ensures good plant nutrition, which is good for you, getting more nutrients that you need, including micronutrients like selenium. Also from the University of California at Los Angeles comes a study published in Advanced Materials that shows that a common antioxidant enzyme called catalase, CAT, C-A-T, Catalase, ALASE, Catalase, can provide treatment for COVID-19. Yeah, this is good. Researchers from two places, UCLA and China, found that catalase, a naturally occurring enzyme, holds a potential for a very low-cost, all-natural therapeutic treatment for COVID-19 symptoms and suppresses the replication of coronavirus inside the body. That's what it found. Now, for us, catalase is produced naturally and used by humans and animals and plants. Inside cells, the antioxidant enzyme kickstarts the breakdown of hydrogen peroxide, which can be toxic, into water and oxygen, which are not. The enzyme is also commonly used worldwide in the food production and as a dietary supplement. There's a lot of focus on vaccines and antiviral drugs, but I believe that we should be looking for something that is more natural, that can take the hyperinflammation that is associated with viral infections and turn that inflammation off. This is just one more thing that can do it. Vitamin E can do it, and certainly for upper respiratory tract viral infections, astragalus at around 1,500 milligrams can do it. Vitamin C is known to bring down cytokines, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-A-S. It's a protein that is produced in white blood cells. And cytokines are an important part of the human immune system, as I mentioned yesterday. But they can also signal the immune system to attack the body's own cells if too many are made, what is called a cytokine storm. And that's what a lot of people with Alzheimer's, lung cancer, liver cancer have, cytokine storms. So turning off inflammation is one of the very first things you can do to help with all illnesses. So just one more way that we can help ourselves. And from the Postgraduate Institute of Medical Education and Research in India, they had an interesting scientific study. It showed the effects of 1 month of common yoga protocol and how it mediated, meaning it lessened, angiogenic and neurogenic pathway problems, meaning having a healthier heart, healthier circulation, and healthier brain from 1 month of yoga. And this is a scientific study. So that's good. That's terrific. And also, if you're an older person, and according to Northwestern University, quote, anxious, moody, older adults are vulnerable to worse cognitive function. It depends upon how close you are to an older person. It depends upon their status, their state of health, whether they're still working, still engaged in relationship with family members or not, whether they're alone and lonely, whether they're sick and vulnerable, whether they're economically okay, as many are, or economically deprived, where they can't pay their bills. That will impact a person's mood, and it creates anxiety. Those two things, being moody for what you cannot control, and you're anxious, that is speeding up your cognitive decline. So what you fear, you actually create. That's why mindfulness, prayer, listening to music, laughing, watching comedies, being around people you enjoy their company, holding hands, having a pet and petting the pet, and all these wonderful things that are the gifts of life can bring us into a better state of calm. And in that state of calm, the body heals, it rejuvenates, and you have a lower level of inflammation in the brain. Where anxiety, oh, that's different. That speeds up the inflammation in the neuropathology process. And you have more cognitive resilience if you're calm, less if you're anxious. So calmness as you get older. And from the University of Shizuoka in Japan comes a study about green soy extract. It can prevent cognitive dysfunction. That's correct. Intake of green soy extract could help reverse cognitive dysfunction and its associated accumulation of beta amyloid proteins in the brain. And why is that important? Simple. Put it in proper context. And this was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Functional Foods. When you have an accumulation of what is called beta, B-E-T-A, amyloid, A-M-Y-L-O-I-D, beta amyloid proteins, that's directly associated with the development of brain stunting conditions, including Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. So molecular mechanisms of these beneficial effects on brain function were examined using a particular type of transcriptome analysis and an increased expression of what is called lipocalin type prostaglandin D2. I don't want to get into the science of it. I'll just say that when you have the green soy extract, you are helping prevent your brain from aging and disease. Make it real simple. And one last thing. From San Francisco Veterans Administration comes a study that was given at the annual meeting of the North American Menopause Society, and it showed that cannabis use for menopausal symptoms works. Now, I believe that the best way is having the cannabinoids be non-psychoactive. Also, it doesn't hurt the lungs, and it has enormous benefit on helping balance out many of the hormones in the body. So, just something good, something that helps people. The University of York, as well as University of Lincoln in the United Kingdom, sharing a home with a pet acts as a buffer against psychological stress during the lockdown. Okay. And it also helps us when there's no lockdown. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to share a video. You can watch by going to prn.fm, or you can listen to it. And by the way, tonight I have I'm starting a whole new series. We've done over 700 interviews with called Remarkable Minds, meaning interviews with remarkable minds around the world. And we have another one tonight, a professor, an immunologist, and a bacteriologist and a virologist. She's a professor in Ireland, and the interesting part, she's really mainstream science, but she's speaking out. It's going to be for about a half hour, and she's going to tell you the truth about the statistics on COVID we've been lied to, and I cannot believe it's anything other than intentional lying in order to promote a vaccine and promote the promotion of very expensive drugs, where we have very inexpensive drugs that could help with coronavirus. And by the way, I'm going to try in a moment to explain the difference between symptoms of coronavirus, symptoms of a cold, and symptoms of the flu. I think you might find this extremely beneficial. Also, later I'll be sharing a commentary from John Whitehead on the election. And there's another proven life-saving drug. Now, I mentioned hydroxychloroquine. Write this one down because this is also very important. It's called ivermectin, M-E-C-T-I-N, ivermectin. And when used, there are combinations like hydrochlorine and zinc and also different antibiotics. These are all mainstream, long-used, safe medicines. They've been used by doctors by the tens of thousands, helping all kinds of patients, and they have enormous success, and the studies are there to prove it in the peer-reviewed literature on PubMed. We've collected all of them, and yet none of this is being offered. Why not? Ivermectin is an inhibitor of COVID-19-causative virus in vitro. In fact, a single treatment is able to affect a 5,000-fold reduction in the virus at 48H in cell culture. And it's FDA approved for parasitic infections. And ivermectin is widely available due to its inclusion on the World Health Organization model list of essential medicines. So when you have drugs that are working now, that, let's say, a school teacher could take preventatively one of the hydroxychloroquine combinations once a month, one tablet once a month, and that could help protect them. But in caught in the immediate beginning of a COVID infection, it can knock out the infection, and especially at the lower doses that are being used, 200 to 400 milligrams once or twice a day, depending upon what the doctors suggest. But none of this is getting out to the people. None of it is being intentionally suppressed and attacked, and yet every time it's attacked, we show that their attacks were fraudulent, faulty, not good science. Anyhow, I just want to keep sharing things with you that can make a difference. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to go to five young men repeatedly disturb an elderly veteran when he was having his meal. Now, you've all seen, I'm sure, most of you have seen people eating, just normal people eating in restaurants throughout America, and suddenly they're descended upon by dozens, if not hundreds, of people raising hell, getting in their face, demanding that they, you know, give allegiance to Black Lives Matter, whatever. And many of us, myself included, find this offensive. That's not how you change hearts or minds. So it's a lot of negative. Let's show you the opposite when we come back.
In my opinion, there's no way to compensate all the brave men and women who risk their lives for our freedom and protection. But we can, however, help them by praying for their safety, reaching out to their families and supporting them, whether financially or morally. Unfortunately, there are too many military veterans who suffer in silence and are completely forgotten. When this elderly Vietnam veteran stopped at a restaurant for dinner, he noticed a table of younger guys nearby. He didn't think much of it until the guys swarmed his table one by one, repeatedly disrupting his meal. Soon, their conduct caught the attention of the entire restaurant as the veteran started to cry. Before we begin, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to our channel, and click the notification bell for more amazing videos. And the couple was looking forward to having a good time together. As usual, Lou was wearing his U.S. Navy Vietnam veteran cap when he went out. The couple got to the restaurant, and after being seated, Lou noticed five guys sitting at a nearby table. He didn't know it then, but the young men noticed Lou and his hat, too. And they were going to make this one evening he'd never forget. After Lou and his wife ordered, the young men sprung into action. Lou was just enjoying his meal quietly when one of the young men came over and stood at Lou's table. "I stood up," Lou recalled, as he came eyeball to eyeball with the young guy. The young man threw out his hand, wanting to thank Lou for his sacrifice. The gesture caught Lou by surprise. After all, it isn't the type of scene that unfolds at dining establishments every day. Lou thought it ended there, until the rest of the group stood up and expressed their gratitude. "I knew they were military by their haircuts, high and tight," Lou said, explaining how he knew they were service members. In fact, the young men were Marines. And as I mentioned, it didn't stop with one handshake. When the first man returned to his table, another got up and walked over to Lou. Once again, the veteran stood up and didn't really know what was waiting for him. The second young man then said, "I want to thank you for all five of us," motioning to the others. Lou thanked the young men for their kind words, and they talked briefly. Lou expressed his appreciation and was wishing all the men well with their future military careers. After that, he returned to his meal, thinking that was the end of it. But minutes after Lou and his wife finished their dinner, he beckoned for a waiter to bring over the check. When the waiter arrived at the table, he was waving the bill with a big smile on his face and said, "This is your lucky day." The young Marines had bought Lou's dinner. Also, there was a message on the receipt. One of the Marines had written "Semper Fi" across the top with an "Oorah" at the bottom. Lou, completely taken by surprise, went over to their table and put his arm around one of the guys, insisting they didn't have to pay for his dinner. A simple thank you was enough. "You don't have to do this. I know being in the military, you don't make a lot of money," Lou told them. But the Marines stood firm. "They wanted me to know how much they appreciated me," Lou said. As Lou and Annette were about to leave, something else happened that left all the other guests in awe. Knowing that they were about to part ways, the young Marines wanted to give the veteran one last show of respect. While the fifth man was off paying the bill, the other four walked up to Lou's table and extended their hand to shake the veteran's one last time. he recalled, admitting he teared up talking about it. Each one of them thanked and hugged him one by one. As Lou described the incident, tears were again filling his eyes. They filed in front of my table, stood in line, and each one of them again put out his hand, shook my hand, thanked me, hugged me, and walked to my right, Lou recalled. The atmosphere in the restaurant, which was noisy and chatty, was replaced with an unusual quiet as onlookers watched the Marine's conduct. After the fourth Marine gave Lou the sharpest salute he'd ever seen, they turned and walked out. Lou was in awe and felt the deepest gratitude for the men who so emphatically expressed their appreciation for his service. The room got really quiet. Everyone was looking, Lou said, dabbing a tear from the corner of his eye. Sorry, I still tear up when I talk about this. Other people stood and applauded. Lou couldn't help but turn to his wife, who said he'd better sit down and catch his breath.
Bring it down. Something positive. Now, one group understands the sacrifice that an older group made. Think of all those vets in Vietnam. I was against the war in Vietnam. I'm against all these wars. My family are Quaker. I was brought up to be against the nature of conflict, imperialism, hegemony, etc. But I'm for soldiers because I understand how many will go into battle risking their lives because they feel it's a greater sacrifice. You and I know the truth. They're being used as pawns. They don't often know that until they're in conflict, and there have been many good anti-war films, Born on the 4th of July being one of them, Oliver Stone's film, an outstanding film, that show us this. But that does not diminish the courage and sacrifice of the millions of men and women who have fought in battle. I've counseled thousands of former vets, and when I asked them about would they do the same thing again, many said no. They're a lot wiser as to what war is about and conflict and invasion and for assets or geopolitical reasons. But when you're young, and especially those coming from small communities or coming from inner city where you might not have another job, that was true in Vietnam, it still doesn't make you any less of a victim. Because think of how many millions of those vets from Vietnam suffer with exposure to Agent Orange, 245D, dioxin. That was a deadly legacy they brought home with them. Not only did it impact them, but it also impacted their genes and impacted many of their children. Same with Gulf War syndrome after the 1991 conflict in Iraq and Kuwait. So we have to understand that low on the totem pole are the vets, but we have veterans who protect us every day. And until you are a veteran, until you have veterans in your family, until you've seen people who are willing to sacrifice their lives for greater good, then we have another group out there mocking them, ridiculing them. And these are people who aren't trying to bring trouble to anyone, just trying to get through a day. When I think about, I was down at 9/11, and a guy came over to me, and he said, we got to get these guys out of the building because they were exiting the building very slowly after the first plane crashed. And they weren't running out to get out of harm's way. It was like, okay, there's an accident, but nothing else is going to happen. Yeah. And he mentioned my name. I said, how do you know me? He said, oh, I'm in the Secret Service. I live in Washington, D.C. I'm just up here today. Family's up here. And I listened to you on PFW down in Washington for a long time. And so together we tried to encourage as many people as possible to get out of the building and run up the West Side Highway. And I'm thinking as I'm watching all these cops, all these firefighters, all these first responders running into the building. and the sacrifices they were about to make. Those are heroes. Yeah, there are racist cops, and there's a big problem with our entire justice system. I've been talking about it long before Black Lives was even a thought in anyone's head. You've heard me for years say that our entire system has to be reorganized because it's wrong and it won't change itself. Power doesn't surrender itself from the way sentences are meted out and the hypocrisy. You heard me say Bill Clinton, you know, was a big drug user, and yet he and his wife put a lot of people in jail for drugs. Obama did the same thing. Kamala Harris, same way. George Bush, the same way. Well, why didn't they go to jail? Or why weren't they held accountable for the people they put in jail and should never have been in? So I have a whole problem with everything involving our justice system. It's corrupt top to bottom. But at the end of it, you don't condemn 800,000 police, more or less, for the acts of a small percentage that should never have been in the police, never had a gun, should have been selected. So the whole process by which police are selected has to be changed. I believe that we should be having people recruited from the neighborhoods so that they're coming from places where they're going to go back and work, walk the beat, not in cars, on the street, not without armor. All that's not necessary. You're around friends and family, around people that know you, that you grew up with. You're there to help mediate, to help resolve arguments and problems before they escalate. You're there to help serve. And at one time, that's what happened. We lost our way. We can thank Homeland Security for that, for the weaponization of police, militarization of police, but also desensitizing the police in their training today to what it means to be the person on the other side of a police argument. So let us not forget those who have sacrificed for our protection. If you think it's a good idea to defund the police, just imagine what would happen if we got rid of all the police in New York City or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Chicago. You've got 2 million more or less gang members in America. They would immediately descend upon people, first the wealthiest people. They wouldn't go for the poor. Right now, the poorest people in the ghettos of America are the ones who are the first victims of crime, and they want the police because the police is the only thing keeping them safe. And yes, there are bad cops, but they are not the majority. Interesting that one of the celebrities that said, let's defund the police, was very vocal about it when her property was, she felt was being assaulted. She called the police. Good for you, not for the rest of us? No. We have a lot of heroes in our society, unsung, unspoken, unknown. Just my way of saying thank you to all of you who've made legitimate sacrifices. To the school teacher that teaches in a tough school and is assaulted verbally, and yet you still go back each day because of the good students. You might have 90% good students and 10% not. It's the school system that has failed you. It's the community, the parents that have failed you. But thank you for the school teachers that still stay there because they feel that every one of those children's future of learning, critical thinking, and preparing them for the world outside is better than walking away saying, this isn't worth it. I don't want to get insulted or berated or attacked anymore. And that's a lot of the school system. So thank you for your courage and your commitment and your sacrifice. For the nurses and doctors and the emergency help in the hospitals who've had the courage, in spite of the fact they could die, and many have from the COVID virus, you were the first line of defense. Even given the wrong tools, the ventilators were the wrong tools. You had no medications. You had a medication, but you weren't told what it should be. So you were giving 6,000 to 9,000 milligrams instead of 200 milligrams at the end of a disease when it was going to help speed up the death instead of the beginning of a disease when it could save lives. But you were still there. You still work long shifts. So in my book, you're heroes. Thank you. To the journalists like Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, and others, Glenn Ford, Nellie Bailey, who are having the courage to tell the truth when you might not get another book contract, no one on television or radio is going to have you on again. You've been scrubbed from all the major media and platforms. Google zeroes you out. You're heroes. You're that rare journalist that is willing to risk everything to tell the truth for those who want the truth. And by the way, a lot of people want the truth. A lot. Hundreds of millions. 1 million people went into Berlin Square just 4 weeks ago to hear Robert Kennedy and a group of people tell you the truth about the COVID vaccine and other issues, and 5G. So we thank those in our society that never get thanked for making sacrifices, for helping. I thank you if you're a big brother or big sister, you take on an orphan child to show them that there's love in this world. Give them the guidance and the smiles and the enthusiasm and be with them. That friendship can make all the difference in the world. So you see, these are the people we should not forget. And that man in that restaurant, that's a rare situation. Those young Marines understood that. Who do you think is going to stand up and try to protect you? Each one of those Marines would come forward if there was a crisis. No matter what the crisis, no matter what the risk, they would sacrifice. So do not let those who are angry and want to tear down and are filled with hate control the narrative. The vast majority of us are peaceful people, coexisting. We've gone through conciliations. We've gone through prayers. We've gone through forgiveness. We're working together for a better world. They're against that, but they're in a tiny minority, though they're in front of a spotlight now and they have the forum. But there's a whole lot of other people who are looking and saying, wow, what that person's doing is not making any sacrifice. They're making situations worse. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, more to come. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to have you with us today. Powerful show tonight at 7 o'clock. I'm also going to use half the show to talk about what I see the future of cities being, including New York City. New York will never come back to the way it was. That's gone. And the people who helped without even being aware of it to spoil it, to make it a faux oasis, to gentrify the neighborhoods that gave it its character, and its uniqueness, and its cultural advantages into this sterilized, plasticized, artificial, heartless, money market. Those people are gone, and good riddance, stay away. Over the next 5 years, and it will take 5 years, a whole new group of people will be coming back. Now, the 1970s were not great New York. New York was a ghetto, the entire city, back in 1970. But we began a rebirth then. And for those of us who've always appreciated the city, it will have a rebirth. It'll take time. And on our next show, I'm going to talk about what's going to limit the regrowth of New York or any other city, debt. And what I see is the impossibility of the city maintaining its utterly, fully, totally corrupt system. And it's been corrupt for a long time. And it's only when you start realizing how corrupt the city is, how mismanaged it's been, that we've been paying for this. And so that money is not going to be there. So a lot of this is going to collapse. And then maybe from this collapse, we'll have a different perspective how to regrow the city, but regrow it with ethics instead of pats on the back and deals made. That's coming up tonight at 7 o'clock on PRN.FM. And for those of you who don't have the internet, and many don't, I'll replay it on our sister station, WBI, tomorrow for you. It's a powerful show. This woman, you got, she is one firebrand. Oh, wow. And she's at the heart of the Orthodox establishment. She's one of them, and she's speaking out, and that's what we're using. We're using only the words of the top MD, PhDs in the world to challenge the coronavirus myths. But let me go through this, because I think it's important. And The Guardian also did a good article, which I would recommend, called Coronavirus Symptoms, How to Tell If You Have a Common Cold, Flu, or Corona. So here's what you got to know. If you have the coronavirus, one of the first things that will happen is you'll have a spike in your temperature. It'll get up to about 37.8 degrees Celsius, which is 100 degrees Fahrenheit. You'll feel it. You'll feel your head is hot, your face is flushed, and that's where a temperature reading will actually help. You frequently will have a persistent cough. It's usually a dry cough, and it's rather chronic. You're coughing a lot. But then comes the big difference. You'll lose your sense of smell and taste. And some people will develop some fatigue and sore throat, shortness of breath, and diarrhea. Whereas if you have a cold, well, of course, we all know that the three things that happen with a cold is you're going to start sneezing, you're going to have a runny nose, you're going to have a sore throat. All right? That's the most common things. And sometimes you'll see yourself being just low in energy, and you can have fever also. With a flu, the most persistent and common symptoms of a flu are your fever, dry cough, and headaches and pains. And you'll have a runny nose, stuffy nose, sore throat, frequently diarrhea. Now, so the flu and coronavirus are similar, except the flu, as you'll see in upcoming articles, it's killing a lot of people every year, and it can kill babies, children, young people, and the coronavirus, that's not the case. So, more to come on this, on upcoming programs. Also, did you know that Bill Gates is now an owner in a nuclear startup? The new mini reactors design, including molten salt energy storage. Yeah, I read an article in Forbes about how Bill Gates has worked with TerraPower in partnership with GE Hitachi Nuclear Energy. Well, the last thing we need in the world is more nuclear power. We need less of it. It is not green, it is not clean, and it's not cost-effective. It's extremely toxic. Three of us wrote an article years ago. It's up on my website. Dr. Ernest Sternglass and Dr. Jay Gould. Gould was in the Carter administration on anti-nuclear policy. And we wrote an article on how many people died, how many babies died because of Three Mile Island. And they absolutely positively scrubbed the figures because we got a copy of the figures prior to them scrubbing them. And it was 50,000 excess deaths from Three Mile Island. The one they said killed no one, it killed a lot of people. And it was in the statistics, downwind. And then later, you see this flat line, but we had the actual original statistics showing they covered it up. So you don't need another one. But here's Bill Gates. I wouldn't trust Bill Gates with anything. Now he's involved in nuclear. Not a good thing. One other thing on environmental issues that's important. I read an article by Aaron Brockovich, and it's all about the U.S. is in a water crisis far worse than most people imagine. Let me quote what she says here. Quote, our water has become so toxic that towns are issuing emergency boil notices and shipping in bottled water to their residents. In 2016, I started research on my new book, Superman's Not Coming, Our National Water Crisis and What We, the People, Can Do About It. Members of our very own U.S. Congress had their water shut down in Washington due to unsafe lead levels. We're in a water crisis beyond anything you can imagine. Pollution and toxins are everywhere, stemming from the hazardous waste of industry and agriculture. We've got more than 40,000 chemicals on the market today with only a few hundred regulated. We've had industrial byproducts discarded into the ground and into our water supply for years. This crisis affects everyone, rich or poor, black or white, Republican or Democrat. Communities everywhere think they are safe when they are not. Each water system is unique, but some of the most toxic offenders include the hexavalent chromium, an anti-corrosive agent, PFOAs, used to make Teflon pans, PFOS, a key ingredient in Scotchgard, TCE, used in dry cleaning and refrigeration, lead, fracking chemicals, chloramines, a water disinfectant, and more. Many of these chemicals are undetected for those drinking the water. Many cause irreversible health problems, and people in communities throughout the country are dealing with these repercussions. Like a blood test for disease, you can only find what you test for. If you don't order a specific test for one of these chemicals, you won't know it's there, and you can't treat water unless you know what's in it. So, she says, I know what you might be thinking. What about the EPA? What about corporate remediation departments? Aren't the experts handling it? The short answer is no, they're not. These issues start with tiny seeds of deception and add up over months and years to becoming major problems. Our resources are exhausted. Corruption is rampant. Officials are trying to cover their tracks. People are not putting the pieces together when it comes to the severity of the crisis. And it goes on from there. That's just a small part of the article. But what's important is this. We all know how bad Flint's water was, is. Okay? Get this. There are 5,000 studies that show it's even worse than that. 5,000 studies. Now to the debate, which will happen tonight. I'm not rooting for either person. I don't tell people who to vote for. That's your prerogative. That's your right. I just wish there were real third parties out there that could compete and have a forum so we could see a diversity of ideas on how to have universal health care, which the Democrats took out of their platform. So the Republicans are not going to give you universal health care, and the Democrats are not going to give it to you. They're going to give you faux excuses. But what can we do? Well, understand the truth. At the end of the day, it is my belief that it doesn't matter who is elected. You'll say, well, they're the worst of two evils, but better this evil that I know than this evil I don't. Or this one we can control, this one we can't. A, you can't control anything. No one's been able to control. Every one of the cabinet members is handpicked, not by the president, by people who advise the deep state who select them. We had the proof of that. That was in WikiLeaks, Julian Assange's release, showing the top executive of Citicorp virtually picked all of Barack Obama's people, and they were all corporate-friendly people. So it doesn't matter who's elected. The person that controls America is the deep state. It is not we the people. We lose. The Department of Homeland Security, which has been tasked with helping to secure the elections to protect the nation against cyber attacks, is not exactly an agency known for its adherence to freedoms or its principles. According to John Whitehead, this is the agency largely responsible for turning America's republic into a police state. Have I missed something? Since its creation, the Department of Homeland Security, which you never hear mentioned, you never see any exposés on it, has ushered in the domestic use of surveillance drones, expanded the reach of fusion centers, stockpiled an alarming amount of ammunition, including hollow point bullets, urged Americans to snitch on each other through seeing something, say something, campaigned overseen the fumbling antics of the TSA agents everywhere, militarized the nation's police, spied on activists, infiltrated every veterans group, distributed license plate readers and cell phone trackers to law enforcement agencies, contracted to build detention camps, camped out military efforts and lockdowns in America through simulations, conducted virtual strip searches of airline passengers, established constitutional free border zones, funded citywide surveillance cameras, and undermined the Fourth Amendment at every turn. So I'm just realistic. This is who's going to be in power, no matter who has been selected. The two buffoons, both narcissists, both corrupt. And the people actually think you're going to get a better deal with one than the other. You're just going to get different scenarios of how bad it can get. And that's been true with all of our presidents clear back, but not including Dwight Eisenhower. And Kennedy's. Voters want to buy into the fantasy that when they elect a president, they're getting someone who truly represents the citizenry rather than the deep state. In fact, in the oligarchy, that is the American police state, an elite group of wealthy donors always call the shots in cooperation with the political elite. The sad truth is that it doesn't matter who wins the White House because they all work for the same boss, corporate America. Understanding this, many corporations had their bet on who will win the White House by splitting their donations between Democrats and Republicans. So no matter who wins, hey, friend, don't regulate us. Don't worry about that. Mr. Obama, you're not going to arrest any of us white-collar criminals down here? No, of course not. And they didn't. Politics is a game. It's a joke. It's a hustle. It's a con. It's a distraction. It's a spectacle. It's a sport. And for many devout Americans, it's a religion. It is a political illusion aimed at persuading the citizens that you are free, that your vote counts, and that we actually have some control over the government, when in fact we are prisoners of a corporate elite, and the people that posture this freedom to us as if it's real are the media. In other words, it's a sophisticated ruse aimed at keeping us divided and fighting over two parties whose priorities more often than not are exactly the same, so that we don't join forces and do what the Declaration of Independence suggests, which is to throw the whole bunch of bastards out. If you had no president, if you put Lassie the dog as president, they could do no worse than the clowns, the idiots, the sycophants, the megalomaniacs, the narcissists that are in power now. In all administrations, you have no such thing as a spiritually inclined person, a humanist inclined person, a populist inclined person. That person doesn't exist. You can't show me that person. And I study politics very carefully. I look into the background of every single one of the people who are on the cabinet, all the special advisors, and they're all complicit. So am I wrong? Do not both parties support the endless wars, engage in out-of-control spending, ignore the citizenry's basic rights, continue the ghettoization of America, but only say they are de-ghettoizing when they've gone in and brought in rich people into a select group of buildings that have been redone, gentrifying a neighborhood, and just pushed the poor who were there further out? They have a long record of expanding government and shrinking liberty. Most of all, both parties enjoy an intimate, incestuous relationship with each other and with the moneyed elite that rule our country. So despite all the fighting among the political candidates, who's right, who's wrong, this person's taxes, that person's dementia, it's irrelevant. You all know that no matter what happens, the people who are in the backdrop are going to be the power players. And they know who their masters are. We don't, because we're still believing in a grand illusion. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.